so we get a very different paper now because I'm talking about fiction at the beginning and kind of nonfiction at the end. But I will be reading, we're talking about the novel by Philip K. Dick, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which was published in 1968. And so often when eco-critics and others, literary scholars, have looked at Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, it's often been seen as a commentary about what it means to be human contra android. And that lens of understanding the novel really comes from the fact that it was made into a movie, which you may know better, Blade Runner. And so many people, when they come to this novel, they already have Blade Runner in mind, and that's how they read it. But what, in my case, I came to the novel first, before ever seeing Blade Runner. And what you realize when you do that is it's a very different novel. And Dick has a very different point in the novel than what Blade Runner has. And it's really about animal life. And he says it himself in reflections about the book, that it's about animals and not about androids. So that's where I start in thinking about this novel. And I'm going to look at two paired ideas in it. I'm going to look at the ideas of extinction and care and the idea of authenticity and replacement. And I come at this as a historian, but who also does some eco-criticism and my own work in looking at extinction. So that's why I was interested in this novel. And you really see, I think this is the original cover from the 1968 edition, that this is about the sheep and it's about the electric sheep. If you notice, it's not a person on it. The covers are actually interesting because after Blade Runner, all the covers of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep have people as the image. They're about the android and the human rather than about the sheep, which is what he thought the novel was about. So we'll start with Extinction and Care. Now what's interesting about the novel is it starts with an epigraph. The very first page before you get to chapter one, which nobody seems to notice, is this. Auckland, a turtle which explorer Captain Cook gave to the King of Tonga in 1777, died yesterday, was nearly 200 years old. The animal called Tuamalia died at the Royal Palace ground of the Tongan capital. The people of Tonga regarded the animal as a chief, and special keepers were appointed to look after it. And it's it actually was a news article from 1966. This actually is a reprint of that article when the turtle died. This is the turtle, who's memorialized and cared for even after death. It's actually at the Royal Palace of Tonga. It wasn't moved to New Zealand. What's interesting then about this as the setting of the scene for the novel and Dick's story is it makes it clearly a story about the human-animal relationship, which centers on care and on death. So the turtle has died. It had a special place as chief. It had keepers who took care of it. So care as a theoretical concern has been of interest in the environmental humanities. And so I think it's an important one to think about in terms of extinction, which is what the rest of the novel is actually about. So the novel takes place after there's been a nuclear war, World War Terminus, in which there is fallout and dust, radioactive dust, such that the humans who remain on Earth are wearing lead codpieces to keep themselves from becoming sterile. There are things like the morning air spilling over with radioactive notes. This is the kind of language of the placement of what's going on. And there's a interesting way in which Dick talks about this dust, and that it brought about the extinction, a grand extinction event. So first, strangely, the owls had died. At that time, it seemed almost funny, the fat, fluffy white birds lying here and there in yards and in streets. And this becomes a way of understanding then the world that remains, as the owls had died, but then come others after the owls. But by then, he says later in a passage that the mystery had been grasped and understood, and a meager colonization program had been underway before the war, but now that the sun had ceased to shine on Earth, the colonization entered an entirely new phase. So what do humans do when everything starts to die out? Is we leave. And so this is his understanding, that it was the owls that were first. And it's very important that he has that understanding, because then there is a scene which comes up in the movie, but you don't have this background to understand, in which Rick Deckard, who's the main character, encounters an owl at the headquarters of the Rosin Association, which is the manufacturer of these humanoid androids. And he says in the novel, "For a long time he stood gazing at the owl, who dozed on his perch. A thousand thoughts came into his mind, thoughts about the war, about the days when the owls had fallen from the sky. He remembered how in his childhood it had been discovered that species upon species had become extinct, and how the papers had reported it each day, foxes one morning, badgers the next, until people had stopped reading the perpetual animal obits." So this is where it's interesting to go back to that epigraph which begins the book, because that was an animal obituary. And so the people had stopped reading. They had stopped thinking about this flood of animal obituaries. So Deckard enters into an existential crisis when he sees this owl, because owls are supposed to be extinct. So he says, well, this can't possibly be an owl. There's a debate about this being an owl, with, of course, the people at Rosin claiming, yes, it is. They, in fact, try to bribe him in the novel, that if you don't tell everybody about our unit, Nexus 6, that's out running wild, we'll give you the owl, and you can have it as long as you're alive. And what happens in the scene is that the Rachel, who's a representative here of the Rosin Association, calls the owl it instead of she. And that tips off Deckard to the fact that this can't be a real owl. Because a real owl you would call she. You would call it with the personal pronouns that we use instead of as it. So in the end, the Rosin leader admits the owl is artificial. There are no owls. But it's interesting that this thing, which looks just like an owl, behaves like an owl, seems to be an owl, but it isn't an owl. And throughout the novel, what you see is that there's a continual emphasis on the fact that since all the animals became extinct, or a great number of animals became extinct, every family has an animal, and you care for the animal. They can be all kinds of things, things we think of as normal pets, but also things like ostriches. Okay, it's a huge scene with an ostrich. There are pet stores everywhere, huge pet stores that take up a block that you can see the animals. There are hospital pickup services, so you call if there's any kind of emergency, they come and take your animal to the vet. There's also counter pickup services for artificial animals, so we'll get to that. It had in fact been a crime not to care for an animal after World War Terminus, we hear, because it would be immoral and anti-empathetic to have not cared for an animal. And in fact, caring for an animal is used as proof of being human. This is what one does if you are a human. So there's an entire discussion with another bounty hunter about the fact that he can't possibly be an android because he has a pet squirrel. And he takes care of Buffy, his squirrel, and loves it. So and Deckard, with that conversation, says, yes, that's true, because androids, they don't have any luck taking care of animals. It's only humans that can take care of animals. There's also a religious element to the book, which is, in and of itself, is an entire discussion. But having an animal then is not only required to show that you're human, that you have empathy, but it's also required for true religious experience and belief. So you need to have an animal in order to have true fusion with Mercer, who's the religious figure in the novel. And Mercerism is this religious movement that's grown post-World War Terminus. And in the novel, you have a kind of backstory of Mercer and what had happened. What I want to draw attention to here is the way in which Mercer, so the salvation savior figure, is portrayed as having loved all the animals, and in fact, they say, been able for a time to bring dead animals back as they had been. So he had some ability. What this ability is never spelled out, but had some ability to bring dead animals back as they had been, and goes through a vision, perhaps real, perhaps all in his mind, of being in a pit with bones, which then he is able to put back together of the dead animals. So this is, if you will, part of the vision that the people are experiencing every day, because you have this religious fusion that you do with Mercer. And you experience then this particular bringing back from the dead, de-extincting the extinct, the donkey and the toad, his most loved animals, which is interesting in and of itself. So that reanimating the extinct becomes extremely important. So it's part of the animal then, you must care for the animal in order to keep them from becoming extinct. But there's also the problem of replacement, and then a question of authenticity that comes with that. In that, we find out, and this is right at the beginning of the novel, that Deckard had a sheep, had a real sheep, whose name was Groucho, and who had died. And after he had died, Deckard says, he called one of those shops that manufacture artificial animals. And I showed them a photograph of Groucho and they made this. It's a premium job. So it is an artificial animal, an electric sheep, who looks just like his real sheep had. And in the descriptions that Dick provides, we see this constant tension between the electric sheep. It's as a sophisticated piece of hardware. It's simulated contentment. It's electronic circuitry fakes. So you get this very clear picture of electric as not real, as false, because there's a contrast with his need for a real animal, that he had some resentment for this electric sheep, which he had to care about as if it lived. So you couldn't just let the sheep do its thing. You needed to go take care of it, even though it was electric. So that he puts as much time and effort into caring for this sheep as it did when it was real. So there's a clear idea that there's a difference between artificial and real, or living. And that creates a move in the novel to think of, become obsessed with the authentic. So Deckard is obsessed with the idea that this electric sheep is a fraud, and it's demoralizing because you aren't in real fusion with Mercer, because you don't have an animal, that somehow you're not doing the right moral thing, you're not empathetic in the way you should. So he's constantly looking in a little catalog that he has in his pocket of the prices of current animals, and visiting pet shops throughout the novel. He does then, after getting some money through the android bounty hunting, buy a goat in the novel. You know, looking in your catalog, black Nubian goat, female, with the money he makes. And it's said to be this free and natural soul, so you have this idea of authenticity and freedom, so that, I hate to break it to you if you don't know the novel and you try and read it, so you're just gonna know the ends, I'm sorry. But Rachel kills his goat, and when he reflects on that, they ask him, did animal thieves take the goat? And he says, no, life thieves did. So having this live thing was what his entire life was about. He has a moment then after this in which he thinks about, well, is authentic just being alive, or is authentic what's in the wild? And there's a scene with the other major human in the story, Isidore, who had discovered a spider. And some androids were picking off the legs of the poor spider. And he has a vision in which the spider is put back together by Mercer, and he goes and lets the spider outside. And Deckard finds out about this and says, he thinks, I could go back and get that spider. So the spider that's out there, because I've never found a live, wild animal. What a fantastic experience. So, not only would it be live, but it'd be wild. And wild was something special. So at the end of the book, his goat's dead, and he goes out into the desert, and Deckard sees a toad in the desert, in the wild. And he thinks, wait a second, but they're extinct. And he drags out his Sydney's, turning the pages, extinct. Extinct for years now. But he sees that the toad, he decides it must have evolved to be here in this desert environment, and it's capable of surviving. So you get this, oh wow, you know, like life can survive in this terribly apocalyptic afterworld. So he takes it home, and his wife discovers it's an electric toad. She pushes its belly, and it opens up. And his response is interesting. He gazes mutely and decides that somebody must have put it there, no way to tell what for. But the spider Mercer gave the chicken head Isidore is probably artificial too, but it doesn't matter. The electric things have their lives too, paltry as those lives are. So this is his concluding thought then, is about, well, if wild is authentic, then what about electric animals in the wild? So the acceptance of the toad, this electric toad, as an animal that should be cared for, is where the novel ends. So that his wife orders electric flies and a renewable pup for the toad. Because she says to the salesperson, I want it to work perfectly. My husband is devoted to it. So there's this idea then of bringing back to life through the electric that we see in the novel. So electric is not only a replacement, it's a way of combating extinction. And so for my last 1 minute, I'm just gonna reflect on the extinction of robo-bees, and we can talk about it in questions. Because the extinction as a technology is about bringing back, or people talk about it as biologically resurrecting extinct species, so you use either backbreeding to make something that's extinct from stuff we have, or DNA, you modify, implant it, it's gonna make something that was there. But my question would be, is the extinction also when you technologically replace an extinct species? So bees, you know, have had a lot of questions about whether or not they're going extinct, concerns because of pollinators. So people are making robo-bees. And then 2013, you had the first big papers and things that came out about microbot bees. People have tested those, made new kind of robo-bees that can go and pollinate single flowers. Interestingly, they make them look the way bees look. They use sensors that are UV sensors so that they would see, if you will, the way bees see. And Walmart, in 2018, applied for a patent for robo-bees, which is an interesting whole separate discussion about why Walmart would patent such a thing. But anyway, systems and methods for pollinating crops via unmanned vehicles about single flower pollination. So it's a robo-bee idea. All of these are about trying to replace the things that we think will become extinct, rather, you know, in addition to the measures that are going on to keep them from becoming extinct. And so the responses to animal extinction then are two parts. One is that you care for the remaining, but the second is to replace the missing. And that in fact, we may not have a choice about which one of those we get to do all the time. So it's interesting to think through then the choice that Deckard in Dick's novel has about his electric sheep, his real goat, and his electric toad. Do we dream of electric bees?